Shopify helps you sell at every stage of your business. Like that, let's put it online and see what happens stage.
And the site is live.
That we opened a store and need a fast checkout stage.
Thanks. You're all set.
That count it up and ship it around the globe stage.
This one's going to Thailand.
And that, wait, did we just hit a million orders stage? Whatever your stage, businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for your $1 a month trial at shopify.com/listen.
Whether by land, by sea, or by Eris, we shall finish disc two of Final Fantasy VII here on the Final Fantasy VII podcast. I'm Josh Wigler, joined here by Z13 themselves, Brooklyn Zed. Zed, what's up?
Hi, I'm here. And oh,
did you like the pun? That was good, right? Yeah.
Well, I thought you were going to say by airship. So it took a sudden turn on me.
Well, there's a lot of different ways you could go because there's a few different ways in which we're traveling by air.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you could
jumping
could,
out of airships, mm-hmm, potentially,
jumping out of airships, going to space, yes,
rocketing, yeah.
Uh-huh. Lots of rocket fuel here in this portion of the FF7 podcast. Where Zed, you've just finished disc two.
You're it happened suddenly. You've unexpectedly.
I know. You've done a lot since last we talked. I think a lot of story heavy lifting happened last time with finding out about Cloud and reconnecting with Cloud. And now that's on the board. So you don't have to worry about like, who is Cloud? You've got the answer. But now we kind of like in this part, turn our attention back to like the less like, I don't know. I was going to say the less existential problem, Zed, except that it is an existential problem because we're all going to get killed by a giant meteor in the sky.
It's literally threatening the planet. But it's like outer existential rather than inner existential.
We are like less worried about like, who am I until the very end? And then we get really deep back into like, who are you? Mm-hmm. You guys need to answer that question and then come back. And I'm surprised anyone's like, no, Cloud, maybe we should just finish this up, you know?
Yeah,
like,
that's a bit of a wild story beat that happened.
Yeah, so we'll talk there about that. That's the end of this too. But a lot of what we're going to get into today is like, all right, Cloud's back. That's great. Hey, don't we have shit to do? And everyone's like, yeah, okay, let's do the stuff.
Right. Yeah. So now it's a lot of like getting through the action and doing the things that you have to do to try and save the planet.
All right. So we've got a lot to recap. A lot of this will be like, I think, fun, granular, nitty gritty stuff. I think some shit posting level podcasting coming your way this week on this Final Fantasy VII podcast, beginning right away with Cloud is back. Everyone's thrilled to have him, Zed. And Cid, most of all, right? He's like, sweet, I'm done being the leader. Being the leader was awful.
Agreed.
That.
Thank God.
Yeah. There's actually, this part reminded me of some of the reasons why I love Cid, because he's sort of awful in a way that the game sometimes deeply acknowledges.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was some of that stuff that happened here that made me happy. We'll get into it as it comes up. But Cloud's back in charge, and we got to go back on the hunt for that huge materia, Zed. That huge materia ain't shrinking itself.
It's not.
For those who forget, there's huge materia now. Huge materia is like this gigantic, unfiltered, raw materia.
Uncut gems.
The uncut gems of the materia world that Shinra thinks, well, if we just strap this to a rocket and shoot a rocket at the meteor, that maybe we will destroy the meteor.
Yeah. A wild plan, especially mm-hmm. when you eventually see like the scope of or like the scale of the size of the rocket compared to the meteor that is hurling towards the planet.
I like to think that maybe some of the characters in Final Fantasy VII have access to things from Earth. There mm-hmm. may be reason to believe this is the case, Zed, considering there's going to be a moment where the great Bugenhagen shall be returning in this chapter. He says, it's all Greek to me. We're like, what are you talking about? Wait,
who are the Greeks? What's
wait
Greek?
A second. So it makes me wonder, like, did Rufus, like, or Heidegger maybe, like, watch Armageddon? And he was like, I've got a plan. I think I know how to stop the meteor.
They just have, like, a human pop culture understanding of what Earth is.
I like to think that that's the case. But anyway, we're getting ahead of ourselves. So, like, to find more huge materia and stop Shinra from their insane, asinine plan, it's time to go to Junon, because they are going to find some heavy materia deep underwater. Is that right?
I think so. I didn't always fully understand why things were where they were or how they were intending to accomplish the things they said they were going to do. And in this chapter of what I played through, you get a decent amount of, like, a cutscene ends and you reappear back on the airship, or a cutscene ends and you reappear somewhere else. And there's, like, some fudging of how things happened and how you got places.
Yeah.
In a way that I feel like there hasn't been before, where, like, if you want to get on the airship, you're going to have to retrace your steps back to wherever you parked the thing and go get on it. Now they just keep putting you back on it. And they're like, don't think about it too much. Just go to the next place we hinted at.
Yeah, so I don't exactly know what's going on. There's some more huge materia. Shinra's got plans for it. They're going, I think they're trying to use a submarine to go to, like, some underwater facility where the huge materia is.
Underwater reactor, yeah.
Yes. So you're like, okay, well, let's beat them to the punch. And you have to do some stuff. Like, you have to bribe a guy to use the elevator in Junon.
I think I'd already done that once for some reason.
It's like,
so
a paltry
I knew that
10 gil is the admission fee. Yeah. That guy could up his fee, I think.
Given that you now have 5 or 6 figures worth of money, 10 gil is nothing.
Chump change. So you go to Junon, you fight a bunch of Shinra soldiers. They're all basically dopes, right? Like, they're all pretty terrible. They're all like, oh, God, there's the avalanches here. Oh, shit, we got to fight them all. I don't want to do it, but here we go. And you just, like, murder these hapless fools.
Yep.
Something about a dog. I don't quite remember. There's, like, a dog that's guarding the underwater.
Yeah, well, and then after you skip the submarine mission, which we'll get to shortly.
If you skip the submarine mission, which we will get to. Yeah,
then you have to go back and follow the dog, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, like, you find yada, yada, yada. You're trying to, like, infiltrate this submarine mission that's happening with the Shinra. And you run into Reno of the Turks once again. And he's like, I don't have time to fight you. I'm trying to get this huge materia from the underwater reactor. I can't do this. I don't have time. Why don't you fight this weird robot thing with swivel arms, this lazy Susan of a robot?
Yep.
Which I believe killed you, Zed.
It did. Well, because this robot with its spinny arms can pick up your party members. And Vincent had gone into his beast mode, his limit break. But then he got picked up, so he was no good to me anymore. And I think then Red 13 also got picked up. And as you're attacking the robot, you're also doing damage to your own party members. And there's, like, nothing you can really do about that.
Yeah.
Because also he's going to spin your party members around and, like, bang them against his own body, doing more damage. So the first time I played this through, spinny robot killed me and had to do it again.
Spinny robot's a jerk for sure. We don't like the spinny robot in this house at all. You defeat the spinny robot thing. And it's like, all right, well, the Shinra's loading up their submarine. They've already embarked on their mission to find the underwater reactor, but they left, like, a backup submarine here. So it's time to hijack the submarine. And you have to, like, fight a few mandatory battles with Shinra troopers, but, like, you infiltrate this submarine and you get this choice once you're in, like, the control center of this new submarine. The choice is you can slaughter these people who I at least interpret. I don't know if you interpreted it this way, Zed, that these are the same people who, like, taught you how to do the parade back during the Junon parade.
Probably.
I'm pretty sure, because it's like the same commander plus the two people who are like, yeah, we'll show you how to dance.
Yeah.
And so you can either, like, fight and kill them, or you can just like choose, like, I'm going to take them hostage. And if you take them hostage, they really do just immediately surrender.
Yeah, that was surprising to me because that's what I did. I was like, I don't need to do more of these tedious battles. And like, who knows if keeping them alive provides information. I've been playing Dungeons and Dragons. I'm not out here to automatically kill things that might be useful to me.
Right.
So you leave them alive and then like nothing really happens.
Correct.
They're just still there.
They're still just there. And so if you keep this submarine, they become part of your submarine crew. They've like officially like turned their backs on Shinra and they just hang out with you on your submarine now. They like operate your submarine, which you have now stolen and you are now in possession of for the rest of the game.
However,
it's a big if. You have to keep it. And you may lose it based on what happens next. You've hijacked this submarine. Shinra's in their own submarine. They're looking for the underwater reactor. And now you have to play this mini game where you are in a submarine chasing the other submarine around the bottom of the ocean floor, trying to dodge underwater mines and I think some other submarines too
that are like shooting at you. I don't know,
and it's timed, and I can't like adequately describe it to like to properly articulate Zed how much I fucking hate it. I hate this minigame so much with every ounce of my soul. I hate this one.
Yeah,
it's so awkward. It's like visually so clunky. You have no idea what you're doing. The controls make no sense.
Yeah, I didn't understand what I was looking at all. I went in intending to at least give it a shot. I wanted to try it. And you get down there and you're just in this black, like, geometric space where like blue squares are showing up underneath you and like red bar graphs are like coming up from the ground, and there's like pinging noises and warning alarms, and I don't know what I'm looking at or looking for. I know R1 shows you the radar. That didn't help me.
It's trash.
Yeah, it's a mess. And you have 10 minutes, like 10 real life minutes, and you can't pause it because I wanted to look something up, I think. And that's not an option. So yeah, I ended up following your lead of parking in a corner and just waiting for it to be over.
So apparently, there's two things. One is apparently you can beat this really easily, that like, you get into the submarine thing and just like unleash a bunch of volleys of submarine fire instantly, and I guess you win.
Because it's like right in front of you at the start. That's
wish I'd known that.
Yeah.
Wish I'd known that. Because I think if you lose sight of this thing, it's over.
It's gone. Yeah.
It's gone.
There's
good
no
luck.
Way you're gonna find it again.
I mean, there's a way, but you really gotta put in the effort, and no. Who's
Why?
Got time for
yeah,
that?
No,
and,
thank you.
In this year 2021. No, thank you. Mm-mm. No chance. So you could do that, or you could do what Zed and I did, which is park your submarine in a corner and run the clock. And by the time the clock runs out, the minigame will be over. And you will no longer be eligible to secure the huge materia from the underwater reactor, I believe.
Right.
But that's fine. Even though you do lose something as a result. But Zed, since you crashed your train into coral, you were already screwed on this tip. You weren't going to be able to do the thing anyway. So you may as well have just sat out of the submarine game.
Yeah, which I did.
And I had never done this before, I don't think. I think I just was like, I think if I run the clock, the game is going to probably let me keep playing and I'll just have missed out on the huge materia. And I decided to just take the risk because I really didn't want to play it. So I let the clock run, and If you win the mini game, you not only get the huge materia, but you get to keep this submarine. If you lose the mini game, your submarine is now in dire straits and you have to escape, Zed. And how do you do that?
Oh, yeah. This is insane. The science of this makes no sense.
Yeah.
This was one of the craziest things I've seen anyone say in this video game. And there's a stuffed Moogle with a cat riding it.
Yeah, stuffed animal body for the planet.
And yet, Cloud says, we're going to ride a torpedo out of here.
Yes.
That's the plan. That's the escape plan.
Yeah. Load up. They're going to load their non-stuffed bodies.
Yeah, their human forms.
Their human forms
or fire dog,
or I guess stuffed animal body if you're playing with Kate Sith. Wow. They're going to load themselves up into a torpedo. And they're going to blast off out of the submarine and what? Hope to not explode?
Yeah,
hope
no, you're like, dead. You're dead.
Hope to jump off in time to not blow up. What is the plan? It's a video game, folks.
Also, didn't your second grade teacher ever teach you about the bends? I grew up very concerned about the bends. Where you get little bubbles in your blood from
it's not good.
Getting out of the water too fast.
Baby's got the bends. Cloud chooses to ignore his second grade teacher's advice. And so you launch yourself via torpedo, saying nothing of the people you've taken hostage. I think the assumption is they just drown.
Yeah, probably.
Like redacted lost characters. And so this cracked me up though, Zed, because I had never done this before until this playthrough. If you do launch via torpedo, because I think the game's like, well, we would never be able to visually explain this. They don't show you what happens.
No.
But they show you waking up on the beach of Junon, being rescued by, wait for it, Mr. Dolphin, return of Priscilla's dolphin friend.
I was hoping you'd be able to talk to Mr. Dolphin, but you cannot.
No, alas. But Mr. Dolphin rescues you from the sea and brings you to the beach. And the whole gang is like, oh, man, well, it's a shame about losing the submarine. I guess we should try and get another. And so, like, this is the part that I didn't anticipate, because the reason why I felt like I could probably get away with this is because I know that the submarine is mandatory. Mm-hmm. You need it. You can't play the game without it. Like, the game would game over you before letting you progress without a submarine, because there's something that you're going to need that you can only get via submarine access. Mm-hmm. But what they do is, what they do is they're like, how about you repeat a lot of what you just did?
Yeah.
And go get a new submarine. You don't have to play the dumb mini game again, but you will have to, like, go through the Junon underwater reactor and just get another submarine again.
Yeah, definitely worth it. Because, like, even the random encounters you have to fight to get there are not that bad. Definitely better than trying to solve that, like, Atari level.
I think probably the best thing would be to just, like, beat it on that first shot if you know that that's an option.
Yeah.
Alas.
I mean, the walkthrough says the battle should be startlingly easy, and don't be too surprised if it takes less than 40 seconds to complete the mission. But, you know, you can also sit there for 10 minutes and not do it like you and I did.
Fold laundry, take a shower, I don't know, whatever you can do in 10 minutes and just leave the game on. But eventually you get the submarine. The other thing is they're like, oh, well, they've retrieved the huge materia. What are they going to do with it? And they go to, like, the Junon airport, and via airplane, the people leave with the huge materia, and it's clear that they're heading to Rocket Town to deliver the huge materia to the spaceship that Sid built once upon a time. And they're going to fly into space, and they're going to blow up the meteor, is the plan. I guess the last thing about Junon, Zed, is, like, while you're running through Junon at one point, your characters stop. They're like, something about Junon feels different. And it may take a minute to realize it, but remember that gigantic laser cannon? It's gone.
Yeah, it's not there anymore.
It isn't there anymore. It's like, what's missing? Something's missing here. Well, that laser cannon's gone. I wonder what's going on with that. It disappeared. It just left. It vanished. Vamoosed into nothing. All right, so fly the airship. You go in the airship. You're like, all right, well, we know where the huge materia is. Let's go to Rocket Town. Let's stop Shinra from blasting off into space. That's our, I guess, our plan B.
Yeah, so you got the submarine, but you're not about to go anywhere in the submarine.
Yeah.
You're leaving it parked at Junon for now. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Park it, set it, and forget it.
That was confusing to me.
Yeah, of course. Absolutely.
You get a new vehicle, and now your next job is to get back in your... I texted you. I was like, okay, so I'm standing on the ground outside Junon between my submarine and my airship.
Yeah. So okay. That's the game plan, is they're going to use the old vehicle to fly quickly to Rocket Town. You get there, and in Rocket Town, you have to fight your way to the spaceship. So much fighting right now.
Yeah, a lot of mandatory, like, very short, quick battles with Shinra dudes. Much more like, this is, like, very typical of, like, a first-person shooter game where you're trying to get to, like, a central headquarters or something, and you have to, like, take out the enemy guards that are in your way. It seems less expected in an RPG.
Yeah. The tension is high, Zed. The stakes are as high as the stars themselves.
Mm-hmm.
You have to like fight Rude of the Turks. I like when you beat him and he's just like lying on the catwalk leading up to the spaceship.
And you just walk over him.
Yeah, it's great.
You can't even talk to him. I tried.
Yeah,
he's just lying there, and you just walk over his flat body.
Yeah. He's fine, but, like, you do just walk over him.
Yeah.
And you have to have Cid in your party at this point. If you didn't already have him, he's like, you are not going anywhere near the Rocket Town rocket without me. Mm-hmm. I refuse. So he just, like, I don't know, like, hips first runs into your party.
Uh-huh.
Like, I'm not sitting this one out. I have to come hang out. And is it on auto launch at this point? They're flying off into space and Cid's like, Jiminy Crickets, we're going to outer space. My dream realized.
Yeah, somebody has set it to autopilot, and that somebody is Palmer, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Cid's like, well, it just doesn't feel real without the countdown. And Palmer's like, well, you're going. Bye.
Yeah. Just hits the button and you blast off into space. And like everyone's like kind of freaked out about it, except for Cid. He's like, honestly, this is kind of cool. I don't know. It's kind of great that we get to go off into space.
Just like I always imagined it would be.
Yeah, he wanted to go to space once upon a time. And then damn Shira ruined everything, Zed.
Sure.
Classic Shira. Screwed
just
everything
trying to
up
make
with
sure
her,
he's going to be safe, but
her,
sure.
With her
Wayne
due diligence.
Shira.
Her due diligence. If not for that. And Cid is like really excited. He's like, look, I spent my whole life devoted to science. And maybe science is going to destroy Meteor and science is going to save the planet. And it's a very romantic notion. And certainly, like, I'm a huge advocate for science being followed and believed and leading the way towards saving the planet. You and I, Zed, both come by the science very honestly.
We are descendants of scientists.
Descendants of scientists here. Yeah. But I don't know if our respective science-minded ancestors would say, strap a bunch of huge materia onto a rocket and shoot it at an asteroid. I don't know.
I mean, I can tell you my geologist of a father who studies moon rocks and meteorites would definitively say, no, that won't work.
Like, I just don't think this is it.
It is kind of a fun, like, man of science, man of faith conversation that's happening between Cid and Cloud at this point in time, where Cid is like, man created science and science can do all these things because we have come to understand like how the world works and like how to bend these things to our will. So like science will save us because like we're saving ourselves with science. And Cloud's like, we're in this rocket hurtling towards the meteor right now.
This isn't helpful.
I don't think this is it.
We've been through a lot, and we're just going to go splat against the rock? That's how this ends?
Yeah.
And Sid's like, oh, well, there is an escape pod, so maybe we should use that. And Cloud's like, you should have told me that a minute ago. I'd be much less freaked out right now.
Since J&K Security Solutions opened in 1987, our attention to detail and customer service have been our strongest assets. I'm President Jeffrey Beckman. We'll always do our best to find the most efficient and cost-effective solution to every job we tackle. Whether it's security for your home or business, installing video surveillance, or being able to control your garage doors from your phone, we can help you feel empowered with simple and user-friendly technology. Let's work together to secure your home or business. JKSecurity.com.
For nearly four decades, J&K Security Solutions has provided protection for homes and businesses. I know firsthand. I'm Jeff Beckman, and with my wife, Kim, we started J&K Security Solutions. Our attention to detail, service after the sale, and product knowledge are the foundation of our success. J&K Security has routinely been recognized as the best of Madison for security companies. We expect that trend to continue as the next generation, our son Jeffrey, takes over as president. Let us protect what is valuable to you. JKSecurity.com.
So you're going to go to the escape pod first. Sid tells you you can go and get the huge materia. Did you even bother?
I did.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I ran the wrong way on the screen. Uh-huh. And Sid goes, if you're trying to get the huge materia, it's that way.
Yeah. So
which
like you are now,
funny to me.
You are now on the rocket, at least. So you can like, you can take the huge materia back. Mm-hmm. So, you can do that. This is basically worthless as far as I can tell. You know what? There may actually be some reasons for like certain materia that you want to master at certain points in time that you're going to want all that huge materia. So go and get what you can get at the very least.
Yeah.
Even if you missed one or two along the way. But there is like one thing that you're going to get if you have all of the huge materia. But you go and you unlock the huge materia. There's a code, a passcode for it. Just look it up on the walkthrough. It's always been
100%. I tried to do it once and I was like, there's no way. That's when I was trying to look something up while a timer was going. Cause then you have 3 or 4 minutes before it's going to like explode or something.
Yes. Like look it up on the walkthrough. Don't be a hero. Just look it up. Look up the number or whatever, like the button combination
the sequence
is
of buttons. Yeah.
Yes. So you get the huge material, you're ready to leave, you're going to the escape hatch, and you're passing by that one thing that Shira, that damn Shira, once said she needed to fix in order to get the thing to fly. And Sid was like, oh, don't you dare. How dare you be in there? I have to abort the whole thing because you've been down here. And Shira was like, I'm pretty sure that this thing's going to explode and it's not going to be good. And Sid was like, I'm so mad at you. I'm going to be such a terrible person to you for the rest of your life. I'm going to never let you forget what you've done. Turns out that she was right, surprisingly, and this thing explodes and like pins Sid to the ground. He's like, shit. Oh no, Shira was totally right the whole time. I'm such a jerk.
I really hoped we were going to be leaving him behind.
And then Shira shows up. She's like, oh, I'm sorry. Did you say my name? Did you ask for my assist? It turns out Shira has hitched a ride into space.
Mm-hmm.
And Sid's like, oh, man, I'm so terrible. I'm not a good guy. I'm a bad dude. Shira, you were right the whole time. Man. And Shira's like, yeah, that's all right. It is what it is. She really could read him for filth, and instead she's pretty chill about the whole thing.
Yeah, you can tell men made this game.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. I think like the closest to an apology that really comes forward is like, I forget exactly what it is, but Sid's like asking her about a thing, and Shira's like, yeah, I looked into that. I took care of that. And Sid's like, oh my God. Of course you did. You're so prepared. I'm such an asshole. And that's about it. Like, that's sort of like the redemption story, quote unquote, for Sid and Shira.
Weak sus. Well, and then the other funny thing is, like, so the other two members of your party are standing there and like, we can't lift this. They can do all of these, like, incredible feats and do all these fights and all this damage, but they can't lift this thing off of him. And I was like, oh, gosh.
Yeah.
Oh, what a bummer.
And then Shira shows up. She's like, need a hand? Shira is like, do I literally have to do everything for you people?
Yeah, of course.
Shira MVP. Shira, like, single-handedly, like, Superman lifts the pod off
of Sid. A scientist who understands leverage.
Yes, exactly. She's like, I got this, don't worry. And Sid's like, oh, God, I'm such a jerk. He's probably not going to stop me from being a jerk again, but for right this second. Right this second. Right this second, I feel bad about it. So you get on the escape pod, and you're hurtling through space, and everyone's like, ooh, stars, this is cool. We're in space. Not to undersell this, by the way. You do go to space.
Yeah, and it is beautiful.
You're in space. Space is nice. It's cool. Kind of a hallmark of many of these Final Fantasies to have some sort of space component. Space happens a lot.
Mm-hmm.
You've played FF9. I'm trying to remember if there's space. It's definitely like alien-ish type stuff. I don't know about space.
Not space so much that I can recall.
No, other ones have space. Depending on where we go next, maybe we'll go to space. I'll keep the space adventures a surprise until they happen. But there's more space adventures on either side of Final Fantasy VII.
Okay.
You leave on the escape pod. The rocket you are on smashes into Meteor. Everyone on the planet sees the big flash in the sky, and everyone's like, oh my God, are we saved? Did we do it? Is it done? No.
No, of course not.
Hard no. Definite no. You see this great graphic, this FMV of the spaceship is just like splattered into the meteor. And it's just like splattered on the side of it, and it's just been destroyed. It's like a banana peel that's been dropped on the ground. It's great.
Yep. And is this another moment where we just appear back on the airship? Because I feel like that's what happens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this happens sometimes where a thing occurs and you just like kind of yada yada back onto the airship. We're like, oh shit, what do I do now?
Yeah.
Cause like everyone's like, I kind of hoped that would have worked. Kind of hoped that was going to work. Sid says something. He tries to be inspirational here, right? He like has this moment. He's like, when I was up in the sky, I think maybe this is where he's like, I was up in the sky and I realized that like I'd been wrong about stuff. And life's worth living for, and we all have a purpose, and we can't just let this end this way. We've got to find a way to save the planet, and I'm as inspired as I've ever been.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone's like, all right, Sid, this is a decent speech, so what should we do? I think Sid then just like kind of like scratches his head and slumps back onto the ground. He's like, I don't know.
Yeah. He's like, oh, you thought I had a plan?
This is the thing that I'd forgotten. I love that scene.
Yay.
He's like, yeah, I was a leader for a minute. And I'm like, okay, well, what do you got? He's like, I have absolutely nothing for you.
No.
I have genuinely no plans.
I flew a rocket. What else do you want from me?
I genuinely have no plan. Not a single one. Nothing. Mm-hmm. And so, leave it to ya boy, Red 13. Because you hear like this wailing of the planet. The planet starts crying. You know shit's bad when the planet's crying.
Yeah, can't be a good sign.
If the planet is crying, that's not great.
No, not good.
It's not ideal. So Red 13's like, well, the planet's crying. Maybe we want to talk to my grandpapa about this.
My grandpapa, Bugenhagen.
Yes. And everyone's like, oh, yeah, that's right. The George Carlin-looking dude with no legs who floats around and is a total weirdo, but is kind of amazing.
Yeah.
Bugenhagen, your grandfather. So you go back to Cosmo Canyon, and you have that classic Bugenhagen being like, yeah, if you need anything, you just come and let me know. Except this time he actually is like, oh, you do have something for me.
Uh-huh.
And what goes down here? Bugenhagen is going to try and, like, expound some wisdom to the youths.
Yeah, he is. somehow you get to the, so you talk about the ancients and somehow it's decided that you got to go back to the Forgotten City because there's this whole thing about black and white and the black materia and the white materia and this force or being unclear called Holy.
Yes.
And Cloud figures out, he's like, oh, that's what Eris was doing when she was at the altar before she died. But oh no, the white materia was the thing that I thought was a brain ball that fell out of her hair when she died. And now it's like at the bottom of the ocean somewhere.
Yeah. Basically, like, there is this theory that if the black materia that Sephiroth was tracking down and came into possession of, thanks in no small part to Cloud, if that's what he used to summon Meteor to destroy the planet, there's this other materia called the white materia that summons this power, this huge magic power called Holy, and that the white materia was the thing that Eris had her whole life. Like, she was in possession of this thing. I guess it's the last of the ancients, maybe, like an heirloom that she held on to, and that she was going to go and try and cast it to counteract Sephiroth.
Right.
But she did. And also, like, before that, like, everyone's, like, getting really sad and thinking about Eris again for the first time. Like, I remember Eris. It's like, no, it's not that, like, I remember Eris. It's that I haven't had time to forget her.
Yeah. And unless you're like, Sid, who says, yeah, what, did that girl go to that place?
I know.
I hate it so much.
Yeah. Sid has no respect for Eris at all.
Or he's, anyone, know, really.
Yeah. He really doesn't. He's a crusty old man.
I would get so sad. I was like checking all the stores and stuff because there's a few places you can get to now that you couldn't get to before.
Mm-hmm.
I think one of them is in Cosmo Canyon. There's somewhere that like there was a rope blocking you off from going behind the counter of a store. And I kept trying to go there and I couldn't get there. And I was so relieved I could go there this time. But I would get sad every time I went into a weapon store and you could buy weapons for Eris. And I was like, I can't use those anymore.
No, they're unavailable. Cool. They're just like there to like tease you, I guess. I
mean,
don't know.
You can spend the money. You just right, have
but
no
there's,
use for
there's
them.
No use for them. There's no yeah. use for them. But this is the kind of thing that was like part of the reason why people really thought that there's got to be a way to resurrect Eris.
Mm.
Sadly, no.
Yeah.
Can't do it. So, like, everyone has this theory, like, oh, well, maybe if we go back to the city of the ancients where she died, maybe we forgot something. Maybe we missed something. And Bugenhagen's like, sweet, I'll come with. And you're like, oh, you sure? He's like, yeah, I love flying. Flying's great. Watch me go. And, like, when you bring him to the airship, he's just, like, floating around the airship.
Yeah, he just, like, pieces out. He's like, I'll be on the deck. And then, like, floats up and out of frame.
Yeah, it's great. It's great. So you go to the city of the ancients with Bugenhagen. And deep in the city of the ancients, he's like, oh, look at this contraption. It's basically, there's like this giant mechanism thing here that needs a key. It's a shame we don't have this key.
I did not follow any of this at all.
Doesn't make a lot of sense.
I've been continuing to try and do as much of this as possible without a walkthrough. Now that I'm past the most spoilery part of the game, I'm using the walkthrough less than I was before, ironically.
It's funny. Yeah.
But I was like, well, let me see if I can go back to where Eris died and if there's anything I can do to get this white materia. I figured I'd try. But that fish is back blocking your spot that was there before. If
yeah,
you
can't
ran
go
straight
in.
Through like yep. I did the first time.
Yeah. I think a lot of people thought that like somehow like if you stayed at a certain point in the night, the fish would disappear.
Oh, wow.
Go back
yeah.
down there. But no. But Bugenhagen's like, yeah, we need like a key to operate this old ancient machinery. There's a riddle here that explains the key or where the key is located.
Mm-hmm.
And it's this very obscure riddle that's like in this place that sunlight cannot touch.
Yeah.
Something like that. And Bugenhagen's like, yeah, go find the key and then come back and let's figure this out.
Yeah, go to the place where the sun don't shine and, and come back.
Yeah. And
somewhere on the planet.
He's like, and if you have trouble, come find me and look for advice. It's It's been a long time since I've needed to do that, since I know where the key is. But did you end up doing that at all, Zed? Did you, like, go back to Bugenhagen where he's like, I think I might have more clues if you come see me later?
No, because at this point was when you told me to go on the little side quest that I think we're going to talk about later.
Yes, yes.
But because I did that, and that involved the submarine, after I finished that, I was just kind of exploring around in the submarine, and I found another little tunnel, and I went through the little tunnel, and I came out of the tunnel, and I found the key of the ancients. Totally really, by accident.
It's a really one in a million thing in terms of, like, what are you supposed to do? Like, if you didn't even have that guidance. So, yeah, basically, like, Zed and I sidebarred. And I was like, Zed, before you move on to Disc 3, there's something you should do in Disc 2 that involves the submarine. Let me know when Bugenhagen tells you you need to go and find a thing because you're going to want to do this submarine mission then. So, like, you're going to use the submarine to go and do this thing that involves Vincent. We'll talk about that more on the next podcast. But I'd forgotten that the location of that, and I discovered this the other day, too, when I was playing, I'd forgotten that the location of that thing is so close to the location for the key to the City of the Ancients. Yeah. But, like, how do you figure that out on just the one clue?
No,
I really
idea.
Don't remember.
I don't know how you find anything down there without looking at a walkthrough or something. Like, I used to walk through to find the Vincent thing, which you had recommended. I do. And even with the walkthrough, it's a little confusing because, like, the entry points underwater are a little hard to discover, especially if you haven't done it at all before and don't know what you're looking for. And I couldn't believe it when, like, all of a sudden it was like, you've acquired the key of the ancients. And the only reason I even knew that was the thing I was looking for, having not particularly followed all the stuff Bugenhagen was saying, was that it's like the name of the walkthrough chapter is the key
right.
of the ancients.
Right.
And I was
right.
like, oh, well, I guess I found
guess that's
the thing. I wasn't even technically at this moment looking
yeah.
for.
Yeah.
That's convenient.
So you get it and you bring it back to Bugenhagen and he plugs it into this corner of the city. And what it does is basically like this gigantic movie projector onto like this column of water.
Yeah, you hand him a spiny thing that looks nothing like a key, and he's like, I'm going to go put it in this music box, which is a thing that looks nothing like a music box.
At all.
No,
at all.
I was so confused.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah, but it moves some plates around so that then water starts falling into the place where you are, and it's surrounding this like central platform where you and Bugenhagen are talking. And so now the water is like a projection surface.
Right.
For the device in the middle.
Just to like re-traumatize you, it replays Eris's death, but like in a different context now. At least based on everyone's interpretation of this.
Mm-hmm.
They find out that like, I think Bugenhagen figures out that like, the white materia would glow a pale green if it was successfully casting the spell holy.
Right.
And so Eris knew that she wanted to cast this spell, but the most effective way to do it would be to ask the planet's assistance in casting the spell. Mm-hmm. And the most effective way to do that would for your soul to effectively interface with the life stream
right.
and ask the planet. So they all kind of like figure out in this moment because like the projector like retells the story of Eris's death and lingers on the white materia glowing pale green in the bottom of the water after it had like improbably fell out of Eris's hair. And everyone's like, oh shit, she cast it. Oh God. She's like, she effectively threw herself on the sword as like a no Sephiroth. If you strike
Ouch.
Me down,
yeah.
I'll become more powerful than you can possibly imagine. Like big Obi-Wan Kenobi vibes.
Mm-hmm.
Where like, she like knew that this was the way that like she sacrificed herself so that she could go to the planet and cast this spell that would make what Sephiroth is doing redundant, would basically just like cancel out his plan. The problem is that Sephiroth has gained as much power as he has, that he is also in contact with the planet, and he's basically blocking Eris's soul's path to reaching the planet itself and casting the counterspell. So he's like not only summoning Meteor, he's like playing offense and defense for his plan right now. He's like blocking her and he's summoning the Meteor. And so now Cloud's like, well, Eris is not going to have died for nothing. We are going to make sure that this insane plan that she executed works, because it should be able to work. And so like they've like now feel like, okay, we actually have a fighting chance. Like Eris is like still in this, kind of.
Yeah. She's still helping us from beyond the earthly plane.
Yeah. I think there's some like sweet metaphor stuff to read into it of like a person can be gone, they can still help you on your way.
Yeah.
I think that there's a lot of that energy here of like in life you lose people, but are they really gone? I think is something that they're going for here, that like even after they've lived their life, they're still living through you. And I think like that is a big piece of what they're trying to channel with the Eris story through Cloud and the rest of the gang, except for Cid.
Except for Cid, yeah. 100%.
Yeah. So like everyone's like kind of like amped up. They're like, all right, we've got a fighting shot again. I guess let's leave the city of the ancients and like regroup and figure out, oh my God, it's Weapon. Oh shit. Because it's been a minute, Zed, since we've talked about Weapon.
Yeah.
The giant kaiju monsters. And there is one emerging from the ocean that's just like, surprise, bitch. Bet you didn't think you'd see me again.
Yeah, it shows up and just starts like slowly, ominously walking through the water.
Yeah.
It's very creepy.
Yeah. And like if you fly your airship into it, you just like bounce off of it. And you eventually just like it's moving towards Midgar.
Yeah.
And Midgar is meanwhile, maybe as a happy accident, has relocated the sister ray, the giant cannon from Junon, and strapped it onto Midgar. And Shinra plans on using all of the Mako energy from the various Mako reactors in Midgar to power the cannon and shoot a GD laser beam from Midgar Zed all the way to the North Crater.
Yeah.
That's the plan.
A different cockamamie scheme to try and defend themselves from various existential threats.
Yeah. And so, like, that's happening, and Weapon is approaching, and Kate Sith is, like, giving you all of the dirt from inside of the belly of Shinra. It is now painfully obvious that he is actually Reeve.
Yeah.
The head of urban development in Shinra. The very like suave blue suit. He's sort of got like a cat whisker beard thing going.
I don't understand. We spend a decent amount of time like cutting back and forth between Kate Sith and Reeve. And he will eventually be like found out, I guess, and taken away, question mark. But even once that happens, he's still like talking to the party and running around with the party. And I wonder, we're not going to get an actual answer to this clearly, but like how is Kate Sith being controlled?
Spectacular
how
question.
How is the voice, like how is he continuing to talk to them?
Zed, it's a tremendous question.
The mechanics make no sense.
None.
And, like, I've accepted that that is a fact, but when they're specifically like, we're taking you away.
Yeah, they arrest him. They arrest Reeve.
In case if the robot is still running around, I'm like, how?
It is never explained.
Kate Sith the robot also, like, talks differently from Reeve.
Yes.
Kate Sith very often adopts a similar, like dialect as Barrett.
Yes.
Of like dropping the G's on words and like saying yo and things like that that are definitely not how
he's Meowth from Pokemon.
Yeah.
But then he's like this buttoned up serious guy at Shinra.
Mm-hmm.
Humans.
Apparently quite an actor.
We contain multitudes.
Yeah.
You know?
I believe it.
We have it in us to be buttoned up business people while simultaneously being robot cats riding robot Moogles, devoting our stuffed animal bodies for the safety of the planet.
What a magical world.
Yeah. So Reeve is like giving you the dirt of like what Shinra's planning. Meanwhile, Weapon is advancing. You fight it. Zed, you killed it on the first shot. Bravo.
I did.
Or you beat it on the first shot, I should say. You didn't kill it.
Yeah.
This is a tough fight, but you did it. That's great. I remember dying so many times. And just because you beat it doesn't mean you're stopping its advance. It's like, nah, I'm going to keep going. You're like, I think we should get out of the way.
It is alarming because you like land on the beach. Well, I landed somewhere else and like went into Midgar, but you can't actually go in where I was. So I came back out and you fly around to where it is, or you run around. And it sort of like slow approaches out of the side of the screen, like comes lumbering in at you.
Yeah.
And you just sort of have to wait for that to happen for the battle to start. And it's like, okay, we're going to do this.
Yeah. Yeah, he's a slow walker. It's another one of those, like, just park the airship and wait. You know, like, get in the corner and let the submarine game end. Park your airship and wait for the weapon. There's no way to speed that up. You just have to endure it. But you defeat it, and then it keeps going, and Shinra fires the cannon, because now it's not only... this is don't mistake coincidence for fate stuff for another Lost reference, Zed. Weapon is just like marching straight in front of the cannon, and the cannon is aimed at the northern crater. So two birds with one cannon. Shinra fires the laser, and meanwhile, Weapon fires a bunch of missiles. From its like shoulder cannons. And a lot happens here. They like the laser plows through the weapon and like swoops it off its feet, kills it instantly, and also fires all the way to the northern crater, if I'm not mistaken.
And like eliminates the barricade.
Yeah.
The, like, energy force field that has been around the crater since you were last there.
Does it break it, or does it make it worse? I don't remember.
I think it dismantles it.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Because you are going to fly there.
Yes.
And then I will remember why eventually, that, like, you're like, oh, no, this isn't where we're supposed to be, and you leave again.
Yeah.
But, like, you go land there, and they're like, oh, the barrier has been destroyed.
Yeah, I think you fly there... to like check on like, oh, how where did the laser wind up? Did they do it? And it turns out that they did. They killed the weapon. They fired the thing. They've destroyed the barrier where Sephiroth has been hiding. And the whole reason was like, all right, well, if we destroy the barrier, then maybe we can infiltrate Sephiroth's headquarters. And if we can kill Sephiroth, maybe that's the last thing we can do to stop the meteor. This is Shinra's logic.
Mm-hmm.
But simultaneously, now Shinra's going to be in a really bad spot because they've shot the cannon off. They've killed Weapon, but Weapon fired off these missiles before it died. And it rains hellfire upon Midgar. It doesn't destroy Midgar, but it hits certain places, including the presidential suite in the Shinra Tower. And we are helpless. I should say I am helpless, but to watch as my bar mitzvah style icon, Rufus Shinra, alone in the presidential suite with his beautiful orange hair and his super cool white suit that I wanted to emulate for my bar mitzvah, is there. And he just sort of stands there and watches. He's like, well, shit, I can't do anything about that.
Nope.
And he just gets roasted in the presidential suite. And that's it. Rufus Shinra, RIP.
Sure.
Anticlimactic?
I mean, sometimes there's like so much happening that I guess it's a little anticlimactic for it to happen in a cutscene that way and not be something that you're interacting with directly. Because he is kind of the big bad in a lot of ways for a good portion of the game. Like, he's causing a lot of the problems that you're trying to deal with.
He's the face of Shinra.
Yeah.
And so the face of Shinra, not unlike the Sapphire weapon, got its head shot off by walking in front of a cannon. Maybe there's something to be said of, like, I don't know, stop trying to blow shit up. Stop trying to, like, use the planet's energy mercilessly to blow things up. It's going to blow up back in your face.
Yeah, there's a lot of people supporting the head of Shinra that have helped create all of the problems that Shinra is responsible for. But he is the head of Shinra and therefore is facing consequences for his actions.
Can I spoil the sequel to Final Fantasy VII for you? First, by saying that there's a sequel to Final Fantasy VII. They made a movie, we could watch it when we're done if you'd like.
Okay,
that could be a fun podcast. The story may not be over for Rufus, but it is over for him in this game.
Okay,
that's the end of Rufus here in this game. So. If that's tantalizing, perhaps we could check out the movie when we're done with the game. People may be interested. So now it's left to Heidegger and Scarlet, the head of the military and the weapons development. They're like, all right, well, power grab. We're going to just be in charge, I guess.
Yeah.
These two morons are like, well, we're going to be in charge of everything now. And captured Reeve via robot Kate Sith is like, guys, we gotta stop them. They're trying to do all sorts of dumb stuff. And also, remember Hojo, the scientist? He's trying to power up the cannon again to rob Midgar of all of its Mako energy and send it to Sephiroth to help him do what it is he's trying to do.
Right. Wildcard Hojo, whose side is he on? His own side.
He's on his own side. But he's like kind of on Sephiroth's side in his mind. And we'll get into the why of that pretty soon. But Cloud and everyone's like, all right, well, I guess we got to go back to Midgar and like stop Shinra from being awful yet again, even though we all have so many bigger problems to deal with. These idiots, these awful, evil idiots cannot stop being awful and evil, even in the face of like 5 days left on Earth.
Right.
So let's go deal with that. Cool. Great.
Yeah. At one point, Red 13 says, Grandfather said we had 7 days.
I love Bugenhagen. That is so great. So this is awesome. You fly to Midgar and you're like, well, the best way through would probably be by just, I think, parachuting into Midgar, huh?
Well, because you find out via Kate Sith, via arrested Reeve somehow, that like the city is basically on lockdown and they have shut down transportation in the slums. And so you can't get in there. Like they're trying to keep all the poor, upset people
from
contained
leaving
in one place.
Yeah. Yeah.
Interesting, strange, curious, relevant.
Pandemonium.
Yeah. And so the solution is to parachute into Midgar.
Yes.
Because if there's any form of infiltration that allows you to pinpoint where you're going to land so you get just where you want to go, it's parachuting off of an airship.
Yeah. Yep. You're going to take a bunch of parachutes, jump
all
off
of
the airship, and
everybody.
And this includes absolutely everybody. Kate Sith is going to parachute. Red 13, the little fire dog, he shall parachute as well. And so you get this great scene of all of your characters parachuting off of the airship into Midgar. And it is so fun to think about with some of them. like Red 13, like how do you pull the chute?
You have no thumbs.
Yeah, what? How did you do it? Let's not think about that.
Kate Sith doesn't really need one because Kate Sith is just a stuffed animal.
He just bounces, right? Yeah. He just bounces when he hits the ground, you would think. All right, so you're back in Midgar, and it's sort of like this big action rescue mission type energy as you re-infiltrate Midgar for like this final mission here in Disc 2 to stop Shinra one last time. And there's like a little bit of versatility to what you can do in here. I'd be curious how this played out for you, Zed.
So you're going through like a whole maze of a reactor situation. Slightly similar to like the Temple of the Ancients labyrinth, but more complicated in that different paths will take you different way. Like the Temple of the Ancients, fundamentally, you really have more or less one option of where to go. So it looks confusing, but if you follow the directions that you're able to walk, you're ultimately going to be going in the single correct path. In this reactor, there are lots of tantalizing shiny green boxes that I know are full of stuff. But you're in a sort of like chutes and ladders situation where there are like air ducts you can climb into and slide down, and there are various ladders and stairs. And you know, one thing connects to another, but not everything connects to each other. And pretty early on, I went down somewhere and like the floor fell out from under me and I fell down even further. And I think that may have cut me off from a decent amount of stuff, it seemed like. I spent a fair amount of time running around trying out various ladders and tunnels.
Yeah,
to collect the things that I could.
Believe there's a way to get back to the Shinra headquarters.
Yes, I did go there, but that's yep. First you have to. There's a save point, and then you climb through an air duct, and you come out in like the subway tunnel.
Right.
And so then, depending on which subway tunnel you go down, and I didn't use a walkthrough for all this stuff either. I happened to go to the Shinra building. Because I went down the path where you would like talk to Yuffie and Tifa, and like I followed my friends. They were that direction, so I went that way.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually one path leads you to a dead end and the other one leads you to the Shinra building. So there's a couple of things you can go back and get in there. So I went and got that stuff. I did not climb the 60 something flights of stairs again. I took the elevator.
Good. That's a smart move. Did you do anything there?
Well, I looked at the... I did check the... Once I was at the building, because Kate Sith comes running out and is like, this is the wrong way. And I was like, well, that's confusing. Because I'm here. And am I trusting you at this point? I guess I'm supposed to be.
Right,
but
right,
why
right.
are you over here if this isn't where I'm supposed to be? So I did check, and I looked at the Turtle Paradise flyer in case I complete that side quest. I don't know if that's going to happen. And there was something else I did over there. There's a
weapon for Kate Sith. I think you can get.
I got the Max Ray. Looking at the walkthrough to remember what stuff I got.
Yeah, I think there's a weapon for Kate Sith or a final limit break or something is available
HP
for Kate.
Shout. That's a
what
thing
is
you
that?
Get in there.
HP is it that? Shout.
I don't know.
Maybe that's the thing. I think that might be right.
Yeah.
It's like in a locker.
Mm-hmm.
In like
yes.
the on like the
that's
on the rec
is.
Room floor. Yeah, it's all optional stuff. It's just like if you want to, you know, troll through the Shinra building one last time, you can.
Mm-hmm.
But then if you like backtrack and you start to go the proper way, you run into the Turks one last time.
Mm-hmm.
Rude and Reno and Elena. They're like, gosh, shit's hit the fan. It's time for one last fight. Let's do this. And once again, you've got this choice that pops up. It's like, do you want to fight the Turks or do you want to not fight them? What did you choose?
Specifically because the dialogue is, Elena says, and this is in a screenshot in the walkthrough, what are you doing? Let's go. And your options are, okay, let's end this, or no, let's not go. And that was just so funny to me that I picked that one.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was like, nah, let's not go and see what happens. And they just leave.
Yeah, they're like, you know what, Turks, we had a good run.
Yeah.
Shinra's toast.
Hope we all make it out alive.
We'll see you on vacation in Wutai.
Yeah, see you in another life, brother.
Yeah. So the Turks quit on the spot.
fun fact, that only works if you've done the Wutai side quest.
That's great. I believe that. That makes sense. Because it's the character development.
Because that, right, because it's character building. It's like, that's when you team up because Elena and Yuffie have both been kidnapped by Don Corneo, who's there for some reason. And so you have sort of like a sworn truce with the Turks at that point that, like, we're not working together because we would never work together, but we're not working together. Or, like, we're not actively working against each other. And so because you built up that time and because you effectively saved Elena, they're, like, less motivated to act. They've been sent to come kill you, like, find you and kill you. They tell you this. But because you worked with them that one time, you're like, eh, what if we didn't?
Yeah.
Let's not say we did. And they're like, okay.
They also are so motivated by their money, and they're not, the job's over. They're like, nope, we're not getting paid enough for this, so we're just going to peace out.
Done, so why bother?
Yeah, so they just quit. I think that's the last you see of them.
Yeah, that's
pretty sure.
It.
Yeah. So they ditch, they bail. And then you keep pushing through, and then Heidegger and Scarlet, gya-ha-ha and kya-ha-ha, as Kate Sith likes to refer to them, because that's how they laugh. They show up on a big red robot called the Proud Clod.
A ridiculous name.
A ridiculous name. It's this gigantic robot that has, like, this little hatch that Heidegger and Scarlet sit inside of, and it just, like, pounds you. It's a boss fight. I remember this being pretty difficult.
Like, if you could see the mouth of an actor inside the mouth of a puppet. Sort of like that.
I don't know what that's referring to. Cowabunga.
Oh my god.
I made it funny.
Yeah.
How did this go?
This one I actually beat in one shot also, because at this point I had finally discovered, and I was talking to you about this.
Yes, that's right.
I don't know if it had if my revive or restore materia rather had, like, just gotten to this point, or if I had not noticed it before. But throughout the walkthrough, when it comes to boss fights, it's always like, cast, you know, big guard and regen right at the start, and I'm like, I don't have those things. That's not a thing I can do. But finally, I can cast regen, and what magic is this? That, like, your characters just keep regaining HP forever until they die, if they die.
Regeneration.
Yeah. Amazing.
Yeah. Very good spell.
That saves you a lot of time.
Yes. Yeah. It's just, like, constantly slow dripping magic IV of health.
Yeah.
It's a good spell. And I think you also were using haste.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have like time all equipped to Cloud. And both Cloud and Vincent have regen, I think. And then Red 13 has barrier all. So I could, like, do all three of those things, like, in one shot with each character and be, like, good to go.
Right.
So it's so key at this point in the game, from what I can tell, to, like, start really strong, because as soon as, like, one of your characters gets close to death, then you're spending turns like healing them or bringing them back to life, and as soon as you do that, like, it's over,
momentum is gone. It's really critical to avoid that if you can. Agreed. So I think you've stumbled upon a recipe that's gonna help you a lot, maybe not enough to beat the game, but enough to get you through this portion, which is great.
Although, you beat this robot, and then Kate Sith is like, come on, up the stairs. And you go up the stairs, and you have to fight this other robot thing. And I beat it the first time, and then lost the next battle, so then I had to beat it again, and I died. So then I had to fight it a third time. That robot guy is tough. So I beat the boss battle, But this random robot on the stairs, not too much.
Yeah, yeah. Not for nothing, when you beat the boss, the Proud Clod, it blows up with Heidegger and Scarlet inside, so peace out. Yeah, they're bye. Dead. Bye. And so you finally find yourself at, like, the cannon, which is where Hojo's at. And Hojo's at the cannon, and he says, like, I'm trying to power up my son. And you're all like, you're what?
Yeah, I saw that text kid. On screen, and I stopped, and I was like, your son? And then you press OK, and the next dialogue is, your son? And I was like, okay, good. I'm glad we're on the same page here, yeah. And I didn't miss something.
You're what? And yeah, Hojo's like, yeah, Sephiroth's my kid. So Professor Hojo, it turns out, is Sephiroth's biological father.
Mm-hmm.
And that Sephiroth is the offspring of Hojo and a fellow lover who we'll talk about more when we do side quests. I think we could put a pin in it for now.
Mm-hmm.
And the baby, the product of that relationship, was infused in utero with Genova cells and became Sephiroth.
Mm-hmm.
And so Hojo is Sephiroth's biological father, and he's like, he wants to pump Sephiroth up because he feels like this is the culmination of his life's work. That Hojo's, all of his scientific advancements have been to see everything through for Sephiroth. And if Sephiroth wants to destroy the world and become a god, who is Hojo to get in the way? And by the way, have I told you guys these Genova cells are super tasty? Because Hojo's been snacking on them, and he's turned into some weird monster thing that you now have to fight.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a three-phase boss bite. Boss fight. Boss bit.
You bit.
You boss bit. You have to fight Hojo in three stages. He's like a Frankenstein thing, then he's this other thing, and then he's like this floating ghost guy creature thing.
Mm-hmm.
Then I remember this being a tough fight as well.
Yeah, this one I had a hard time with. The first time through, I like surmised eventually that if you kept killing his little side minions, that he would just keep generating more. So I moved on to just attacking him, because I've learned that from earlier in the game. That you're just wasting your energy if that's where you're putting your damage. So I made it through the first and the second phases of him the first time through. And then it was like at the third one where I lost him, or I died. I don't remember exactly how that happened, but it meant I had to go back and fight the robot on the stairs twice more. Before I came back to the Hojo battle and was able to get my regen and my barriers and my haste all going at the same time.
Yeah. Eventually you kill him. It's anticlimactic. Hojo's dead. He doesn't fire off the shot, so that's good, because it probably would have fried everybody in Midgar. I think everyone would have died.
Yeah, the city would have exploded.
Yes. No one would have made it out alive, so Hojo's gone. Hojo's whole, like, going rogue thing was all in pursuit of, daddy knows best type stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Peace out. Smell you later, Hojo. So yeah.
He gets in a few more jabs at Cloud about him being a failure.
Yeah, you little failure. Cloud's like, who you calling a failure, you failure?
You.
So, yeah, you're the failure.
So you defeat the babe.
What babe? The babe with the failure. What failure? You kill Hojo. Hojo's dead. Yada yada. Back to the airship, and Cloud's like, "All right, guys. So look, Shinra's basically done. That was kind of inevitable. These guys were morons. Sephiroth is this very dangerous, cult figure who has latched himself onto the center of the planet." And is going to destroy us all unless we destroy him first. So we probably should do that. But, like, I think everyone needs to do some soul searching first.
Yeah. Think about why you're here and why you're doing this.
Yeah.
Like 45 hours into playing this game.
why are you here? Yeah, he's like, what are you doing here? Feels like he's like specifically talking to Sid.
Death-defying feats you have attempted with me, from submarines to rocket ships to airships to chocobos to, you know, wherever.
Yeah.
Think about if you really want to be here.
Do you really want to be here? Yeah. He's like, it's not for me. He's like, for me, this isn't really about saving the world. For me, this is about settling a score.
Such a weird moment.
And he's like, and Barrett, like, I get this feeling that this isn't really about saving the planet for you either. And Barrett, like, kind of awkwardly is like, I mean, I guess, like, it's, I mostly want to save the planet for my daughter.
Mm-hmm.
And so Cloud's like, see? But I kind of feel like on behalf of Barrett, I'm like, yeah, but he wants to save the planet. You know, he doesn't want his daughter to live on a ruined planet.
Right.
And if he doesn't save the planet, his daughter probably dies too. So, I kind of think everyone does, including you, Cloud. I'm pretty sure you want to save the planet. Yeah. So, like,
saving the planet might be the key to solving a lot of other
all of these issues
problems in society.
That may be like the top line item. It's like we probably got to deal with that. That seems important. Mm-hmm. If we can't live here, then none of the other stuff really matters. So it is a strange speech from Cloud, and he basically class dismisses everyone.
Yeah. It's like, go back to where you came from and think about what you've done and then decide if you want to come back.
And he's like, and look, if you don't want to come back, I get it.
No,
totally fine. Meanwhile, I got to imagine like Tifa is there in the corner the whole time being like, Cloud, shut up. We need them.
Yeah, let's go.
We need to just fight Sephiroth and finish this thing. But everyone leaves. Tifa stays and Cloud, and it's just Cloud and Tifa on the airship now. And he's like, oh, you're staying? He's like, yeah, you idiot. Don't you remember? I don't have anyone. We've established now that you did grow up with me. You know, my parents are gone.
Yeah.
You know that my friends in Midgar are gone.
I feel like Tifa would. I was surprised. I expected Tifa to go see Marlene, too.
Yeah.
If I'm being sent to go, like, see people that are important to me that I haven't seen in a long time, I'm going to see the little kid that matters to me.
Yeah.
You better believe it.
Yeah.
I was upset. It's like, Tifa, you should go see Marlene.
It turns out that Cloud, you dummy, don't you see? She's loved you all along. You're everything to her, Tifa. It's you and Tifa in the end, Cloud. Don't you see it? Cloud seems a little dense.
Yeah, there's this like inexplicable scene of them not on the airship. They're like on the ground with the airship in the background. Yes. They like sleep outside.
They camp out for whatever reason.
Makes no sense.
They sleep together out and underneath the stars in the airship, and they wake up in the dawn, and Tifa's like, just a little longer, Cloud.
Let me snuggle a little more.
Yeah. Some insinuations. Last night on Earth type stuff. Just a little longer, Cloud. Let me just sleep underneath the stars a little longer. And so, yeah, I think this has been subject to interpretation.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, no need to go too far down that rabbit hole. Cloud and Tifa.
They get back on the ship.
Mm-hmm. And they're like, oh, it's so empty here. It's so weird. Cloud has this line that kills me, where he's like, yeah, don't worry, I'll make a big enough ruckus for everyone. Woo-woo, I'm flying now. We're going to make it. We're going to go real fast. And Tifa's like, I think this is a mistake.
Yeah.
I have regrets.
And I can't remember if it's before he sends them away or after they, spoiler alert, come back, where Sid is like the flight crew shows up and Sid's like, I told you guys to go, flunkies. Like he calls the flight crew flunkies.
He does.
Which I've only ever seen as like something you say about like your enemy's lackeys.
Yes.
Such a weird thing to say to
it's
people
great.
That like work for you.
Yeah, it's great. We should be bring flunkies back, I think. Like forget ops. You know, who are your flunkies? Yeah, it turns out everyone decided to come back. No surprise there. They're like, yeah, man, we like probably didn't leave. We probably all like they probably like all tucked into like one of the secret rooms, like whenever Cloud's like done with this.
Yuffie drops from the ceiling.
Yeah, after they, like, trash her, too. Yeah. They, like, read Yuffie for filth, and Yuffie, like, drops from the sky.
Yeah, of course Yuffie didn't come back. At least she didn't take her materia this time.
She's like, are you kidding me? I'm here! I came back! My favorite is Vincent when he shows back up, and Cloud's like, Vincent, you're back! And Vincent's like, yeah, you seem surprised. And Cloud's like, I don't know, you're just so cool. I think he really says, like, I don't know, you're just so cool that I kind of figured maybe you didn't care.
Yeah.
And Vince is like, I'm not that cool. And then he does like three triple backflips and flies off into his little corner of the airship.
Where he always stands.
It's like, man, Vincent's the coolest.
Yeah.
That guy's awesome. Oh my God, I love him.
Yuffie leaves and is like, I gotta go back to my seat where like I'm gonna be sick every single time you come talk to me out here.
Yeah. And I think also they're like, yeah, Cloud and Tifa, we were waiting for you guys to wake up. And Tifa's like, wait, what? Like, yeah, you know, we were just hanging out up here while you guys were sleeping down there. And she's, like, suddenly very embarrassed.
Yeah, Kate Sith comes and says something. And I think it's Sid who's like, she won't hear what they were going to say if, like, you make it clear that we're here.
Yeah.
Nosy friends.
Yeah, yeah. They're snooping. Some Peep and Tom stuff has been going on with the Avalanche crew here. It's not okay. Not okay. And Tifa's like, this is not cool. And Cloud's
like,
goes
to hide in a corner.
Yeah. I don't know that I don't know how I read this as a kid, but I read this differently every time I play it now. I'm like, oh no, this is not great. So Cloud's like, all right, well, the whole crew's back together. Everyone has figured out their reasons for fighting. So let's go do it. Let's fight. Onward, and like the airship evolves, it like drops some shit, now it's gonna go faster, and it blasts off in the direction of the North Crater, and that's the end of Disc 2, essentially.
Mm-hmm. And no one, to be clear, we don't go around the table and say, like, this is why I'm fighting. It's just established, it's assumed and accepted, everybody has their reasons.
They figured it out!
And we all came back.
They figured it out. Yeah. They figured it out for themselves. And so the second of three discs leaves off with everybody having decided they want to fight and they are ready to fight. And disc three is the end of the game. And on disc three, Zed, you have some choices. You can choose to just keep going and go to the North Crater and you keep drilling down and there you are. You're going to beat the game. If you're lucky, if you can do it right now, or now is the time to not defeat Sephiroth and sort of suspend all logic and embark on many different side missions as a video game is wont to do. And so for the next podcast, let's dwell on some of that stuff. Mm-hmm. There are some story things we can talk about because you could like pursue some different story angles, but a lot of it is just like, fetch quest and side questing and things like that. I think just like a fun opportunity to chart your journey through disc three, because this is real choose your adventure stuff. Mm-hmm. You can kind of determine how much you want to do of any of this type of stuff. And Zed, what I would say is I think you and I can talk offline, look at like the guide. I'll give you a list of some of the things I think you ought to try and do. The only thing that is mandatory as far as this podcast is concerned is you at least have to give the Chocobo stuff a college try. A college try. If you bail on it, that's fine. The reward will basically guarantee you will effortlessly defeat the game.
Great.
So it is worth doing if you want to have a really easy time against the final bosses of the game. But I also fully understand if it's just too much Chocobo racing, because there is so much Chocobo racing in order to do this properly.
Okay.
So, onward to disc three, onward to some side quests. We'll do the side quest podcast, then we'll finish the story. So, that's what's on the menu, Zed.
I'm excited. I'm a little nervous.
Well, the good news is we've banked a bunch of these podcasts. You know, you are listening to this, dear listener, a couple weeks after we've recorded this. Mm-hmm. Zed, you've got plenty of time. We got so much time that it's almost like you'll have no excuse to not do the full Chocobo adventure.
It did take me nearly a week of real time to get from our last podcast to this one.
It's true.
There's a lot, a lot going on in life and also a lot going on in the game.
Mm-hmm. Yep. This is, I mean, this is a really granular chapter. There's like a lot of just tasks to do. And there's definitely story progression and stuff, but it really is all about like, oh shit, it's getting more real. Meteor's coming closer and closer. Oh, wait, we may have a way of defeating Meteor. That's cool. Oh, wait, Shinra's going to ruin this for us? Of course. Oh, we have to defeat Shinra? Fine. Thankfully, finally. And so, like, you just have to, like, go through all of that stuff. And it sort of is situating you. Like, it's a lot of, I think, it's frankly some yada yada-able material that is not too far away from, like, where were we when we left the reunion, right? We just needed to get, like, Cloud back on track and then, like, I think that there's a world where a lot of this stuff didn't have to happen in the game. I think it's some of the weaker stuff in the game.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to get through it. You have to get through it in order to get to the final disc. And here we are. You've done it.
Yeah. And it wasn't tedious. Like, it's been fun.
Yeah. Some of it's a little tedious, no?
Well, it's a little...
I mean, I guess you didn't have...
is a little chaotic, just in terms of, like, get this, but don't use it now.
Yeah.
And it's, and like following, as I said, like at the top of the podcast, following the logic of like why you're going to all the places you're going to is like, don't think too hard about it. Just go where they said to go and like have fun.
Yep. Yeah. 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 All right. So next time, side quests, chocobos, we'll hear more about Zach. We'll find out a little more about Vincent. I think he should also at least attempt to fight a couple of weapons. I will be very, very shocked if you defeat them, but that would be cool. Maybe go back to the gold saucer. I don't know. I don't know. We'll talk it through. Uh-huh. We'll talk it through. We'll talk through all the things that you've got to
do. It's like so hard to gauge what I am and am not going to do well at in this game.
I know. I know. It's tasting menu stuff, you know, fly around, feel your way through. The world is your oyster here. In disc three, there's one weapon that you will absolutely be able to defeat, by the way. There's three weapons that you can fight in disc three, one of whom is absolutely crushable. The other two, very, very difficult. I don't think I've ever beaten them. So, interesting, interesting stuff. We'll see how it all shakes out on the next FF7 podcast. Follow Zed there on Twitter at Hard Rock Hope. I would expect by now, Zed, that our Dungeons and Dragons and Discord podcast has hit the feed maybe even a week ago. I don't know what time is anymore, but it happened.
Yeah, it happened.
We haven't recorded it yet as we're recording this, but we expect
it's
fun.
Time. 2 weeks ago, which was 4 days ago,
in real time,
you and Emily and I talked about Labyrinth on Post Show Recaps Theater. Mm-hmm. It was a great time. That for real already happened. It was a great time.
Yes.
And last week, at the time you were hearing this, I was on Twitch with Rob Sesternino and Jordan Kalish, and I think probably a third person.
Wow.
But that would be a mystery from a week ago. So I'm all over the place. Man. Find me. Talk to me.
Yes. Talk to Zed at Hard Rock Hope. On the Twitter bots, around the Discord as well. If you're not in the Discord, consider signing up. Patreon.com/post-show-recaps. You want to do it. You know that you do. You could say that you don't want to, but we know it's a lie. Maybe wait until March 1st.
I think
you're so close.
When this podcast is dropping, it'll be like right before the start of March.
Just before the start of a new month.
Perfect time to join, right at the start of March.
Perfect time. Perfect time to join. So you're right there. You're so close. Join us. Be one with us. Be part of this family that we are growing. But first, I would ask you to like go and figure out your reasons for joining.
Spend the next 2 days before it's March thinking about why you're listening to this podcast and how much content you might get from spending $5 or $10. At patreon.com/postshowrecaps. And yeah, then when you've decided, reasons? If you really want to have a lot of fun, if you want to listen to some extra podcasts, if you want to maybe play Dungeons and Dragons with me and Josh and a bunch of other really amazing people, if you want to play in the Wario Casino, you will not find me there.
Well, sometimes you show up just to hang.
Occasionally I show up mostly because it shocks people, and that's very entertaining for me. Yes. But there's
you
so many,
gamble with Wario?
So
is that
many
why you want to be
wonderful
here?
Things to do in the Discord, and even just so much extra content that you are putting out, Josh, in the Push to Recaps patron feed.
It's too much.
So much.
It's too much. You know. So search your feelings. What are you coming? What are you coming here with? What do you do? Why are you doing it? Find out your reasons.
And I think you'll find it's worth it and that you want to be here with all of us. And so go say hi to Marlene and then come back to the airship.
And then come back. Yeah. Yeah. You haven't seen the last of Marlene yet, by the way. Yeah. It's just the game doesn't really want you to hang out with Marlene now.
We stan a baby bartender.
We do. We stan the baby bartender. All right, everybody, we'll be back next week with some reports from Zed's adventures through the many side quests of Final Fantasy VII. It should be pretty fun, and it's going to be a great time. Until then, everybody, take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.